We are going to learn about obesity, starvation, and addiction, and how the three of them are intensely linked. And I thank all of you for inviting me to come speak with you tonight. It'll be an adventure for us all. So I'm going to hit you up first with what I call the Walls Diet, and I'll talk about this repeatedly as I do the conversation tonight. Hopefully by the time we're all done, you'll be fully aware and on top of this. Food is critical. I think that's the cornerstone of health, and food, not supplements, is the cornerstone of health. I will talk about some supplements that I think which can be helpful, but I want to stress food is where it is at, and food is where health is at. So I recommend every day some nuts, seeds, fish, or eggs that are rich in omega-3 fatty acids, such as the DHA eggs. I also recommend 9 cups of fruits and vegetables, 3 of which should be dark, intense green or rich in sulfur. And the sulfur groups would include mushrooms, cabbage family, onion family. 3 should be brilliantly colored, and that can be vegetables or fruit. So vegetables like beets, red cabbage, carrots, fruits like blueberries, raspberries, mulberries, elderberries, watermelon, peach. And 3 more of your choice. I simply recommend that they be non-starchy. So white potatoes you can have, but they should be outside the 9 cups. Sweet potatoes, or potatoes that are some of these heirloom potatoes that are solidly red or solidly blue, you can have. They would count in the colored group. I stress the importance of diversity. Your ancestors, thousands of years ago, had a wide variety in their diet. They were eating hundreds, thousands of different plants. We need to have more variety of our own foodstuffs. Omega-3 fatty acids, that is really fish oil, fish, flax, hemp, grass-fed meat. Coenzyme Q and B vitamins, best sources are going to be green leaves, nutritional yeast, mushrooms, and organ meat. Minerals and iodine. The traditional farming tends to deplete trace minerals. North America is depleted in iodine. Our soil is quite iodine poor. Myself as a physician and many of my physician colleagues have been telling our patients for years, do not use table salt. So Americans have quit using table salt. Therefore, our iodine consumption has plummeted, and the vast majority of Americans are now iodine deficient. So good sources for trace minerals is very important. To that end, I recommend powdered kelp, seaweed, iodized sea salt, iodized salt, and to be generous with your iodine sources. We'll talk about that. Okay, so what's happening to us? What is happening to us? This is a look at the obesity trends, and you'll see with every year that we've been capturing, a higher proportion of us are obese with a BMI greater than 30. Now we're up to over 20%, and the trend is continuing. We're up to 25%. Yet it stops at 2002. Certainly, in those 7 years, we've had more states acquire greater than 25%. In fact, our children now, 1 in 4, are already obese. And if you look in teens, this is, again, by year, the percentage of kids that are morbidly obese has been climbing steadily. And the 4-year-olds, in this last year, 25% had a BMI greater than 30. That is very frightening statistic. The consequence for this is that diabetes continues to increase. And with diabetes, of course, are all the bad health outcomes that come with the diabetes. We all know that walking and dropping weight is the key to lowering your risk of diabetes, but it's really hard to do, and I'm going to talk more about why that is and things that you can do to make all of this much, much easier for you. Okay, diabetes and obesity is not the only health problem. There's been a 400% increase generation by generation of autoimmune diseases, things like multiple sclerosis, which used to be very rare, is now occurring even in our children. Inflammatory bowel disease, which used to be very rare, is now occurring in our children. Rheumatoid arthritis, scleroderma, lupus, used to be very rare, is beginning to occur in young people, college-age students and high school students. So, if you look at your kids, there's a 1 in 3 risk that they'll have diabetes or a serious autoimmune disease. And so our children will now have a shorter life expectancy than us. So, you know, my colleagues in the basic sciences are identifying genes all the time that are associated with diseases. And so you're probably asking, okay, so have our genes gone bad? Well, let's think about that. We're Iowans. We know corn. We know corn very well. My dad's a farmer. So we'll take his seed corn. We're going to cut it in half. One half's going to go out into the good Iowa black dirt. We're going to put some fertilizer on it. And the other half we're going to take out to the trash heap. We aren't going to bother fertilizing it, but we'll scatter it over that trash field. We're going to come back in the fall. Now, in the fall, that black dirt corn is going to be very tall, dark green. They're going to be probably 3 years of corn. It's going to be a bumper crop. I think this year that's about 180 bushels an acre. Marvelous crop. Now we go over to the trash heap corn. What am I going to see? It's not going to be green. It's going to be yellow. It's going to be stunted. It will be short. There will be a lot of smut, that is, that sort of gray, silvery fungal infections. You might have a nubbin or two now and then. You will not even get enough corn to recover your seed. But it was the same DNA. It was the same DNA. The problem was not the DNA. The problem was that the DNA didn't have the building blocks, so the corn seeds could not follow the instructions the DNA needed. We are taking our collective DNA out of the good Iowa black dirt, and we're putting it into the trash heap. We are not giving our DNA the building blocks that it needs to do the work of living. That's why we are having this dramatic increase in chronic disease, dramatic increase in obesity, and in autoimmune problems. Here's another quick look at that concept. Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. It's a wonderful book. I recommend it highly. If for nothing else, looking at the pictures. Weston Price is a dentist who was alarmed by the terrible dental health in his practice. Children came in with crooked, mal-shaped, malformed teeth. They were filled with cavities, and he wanted to know why. Now, he did something that was brilliant. He went out and studied healthy teeth. He got together a multidisciplinary team of dentists, physicians, mental health professionals, nutritionists, anthropologists, soil scientists, and took them around the globe to 14 different peoples, studying people in the Inuit, Eskimos, Aborigines, Africans, South Americans, some remote folks in the Swiss Alps, Asia. They did a very careful dietary history, took pictures, dental x-rays, did physical exams, mental health exams, and then analyzed the results based on, was the individual eating a primitive diet, a first generation of the Western diet or the second generation of the Western diet. They also did a nutritional analysis of the actual foodstuffs and a soil analysis. So the Western diet was pretty much the same. Lots of meat, lots of flour, bunch of white potatoes, and a lot of fried stuff. Teeth were crooked. They were, if first generation, they had 50 to 80% cavities. Second generation, they're even more crooked, and it's 80 to 95% cavities. Chronic disease was common, high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, arthritis. And the learning disability, physical fitness, mental fitness declined from first generation to second generation. They got more feeble. The indigenous diet was quite different society to society because people adopted what they ate. The Eskimos did not eat what the Inuit ate. The nutritional content, however, was remarkably similar. It was quite rich in minerals, vitamins. It was rich in the essential fatty acids. The teeth were straight. There were no cavities, less than one per thousand. Chronic disease was exceedingly rare. And the mental fitness, physical fitness of the individuals was superior to those of the westernized diet individuals. His conclusion was that the indigenous people would have a rapid decline in their health status as they westernized their diet. He also predicted that the Western societies would have a rapid decline in health, worsening infertility. And, of course, that has happened. This remarkable study occurred in 1936. And back in 1936, people were eating better than they do now. The medical term that we now use to talk about this phenomenon is called epigenetics. Our DNA turns on and off according to the toxins and the nutrients in the environment. If you have a diet that's high in carbohydrate and grain, you will turn on 65 genes that increase inflammation. If you eat grain and carbohydrates, you will increase inflammation molecules. You will increase the genes that drive inflammation. 65 of them will be turned on. If you eat a diet rich in green leaves and bright colors and meat with minimal grain and minimal carbohydrates, you turn on 75 genes that dial back inflammation. That's the scientific explanation for much of the phenomena that Western Price saw. The epigenetics, that is, the toxins and the nutrients in the environment, will turn genes on and off. I can bore you with the biochemistry of how methylation works, but take it on faith. It was his presumption, Dr. Price, that if people correct their micronutrient deficiencies, he predicted that much of chronic disease could be reversed. Okay. Mitochondria are very important to life. The reason we are not bacteria is that we have mitochondria. I happen to like being a person as opposed to a bacteria, so I'm going to try and take good care of my mitochondria. It is the chemical plant that allows me to make energy. It will also be the chemical plant that detoxifies and removes the poisons, converts them to different molecules so I can excrete them in my urine and in my bile. And it helps facilitate the creation of the various molecules and structures necessary for life. So we need a lot of B vitamins and coenzyme Q to make the energy. That's going to be present in green leaves. It's present in organ meat, tongue, heart, liver, gizzards, and present in mushrooms and nutritional yeast. Antioxidants are what the mitochondria use to get rid of the trash. You see, mitochondria are a chemical plant, and all chemical plants have some trash at the end of the day. If you don't get rid of the trash, eventually they will blow up the plant. Your mitochondria use antioxidants. The easiest way to think about antioxidants are it's going to be pigmented colors. So the blues, blueberries, elderberries, mulberries, purple grapes, the reds, red peppers, beets, red cabbage, raspberries, strawberries, the yellow, orange. And I also encourage you to have variety and have some of every color every day. Mitochondria also need a lot of minerals to facilitate some of their reactions, particularly their detoxifying reactions. And as I mentioned earlier, we have a hard time getting enough minerals in our diet. Getting more seafood, seaweed is particularly helpful. Shellfish, very helpful. Okay, so a quick take you back down memory lane. This is in biochem. The 2-ATP is what you make if you're a bacteria. If you are a mitochondria, you get to make a total of 38 ATP. Those other molecules up there, the NADH, FADH, are made from B vitamins, niacinamide, and riboflavin. In the electron transport system, coenzyme Q resides. This is why you need to have a whole slew of B vitamins to be the catalyst to make those ATP. And the way I'd like to have you think about this, so the bacteria only gets to make 2 ATP. Your cells can pack thousands of mitochondria in one cell. So we're comparing a snail to a jet. And if you want to have your jet engine working well, you want to see to it that it has all the parts. You want to have a diet very rich in those B vitamins. So a comment, what is health? Health then is the optimal function of our cells. That means the optimal function of our mitochondria, our cells, our organs, and therefore our body. It means that in your body, at every instant, there are trillions of cells with trillions of chemical reactions all happening simultaneously, all of which require amino acids, minerals, vitamins, many of which are essential. We have to eat them. And the problem is, we're not eating them anymore. For example, I'll talk a little bit about vitamin C. Linus Pauling, many of you, I'm sure, have heard, he's the fellow who was the vitamin C nut. He calculated that a 70-kilogram mammal would make 10 grams of vitamin C. Primates, including humans, have lost the ability to make vitamin C many generations ago. At that time, primates were eating primarily green leaves and occasional bit of meat. On that kind of diet, you would consume 8 to 12 grams of vitamin C a day. It was Linus Pauling's assertion that if we went back to eating a diet that included 10 grams of vitamin C, the health and vitality of the individual would be greatly enhanced. Now, Linus Pauling was still teaching graduate school at age 92, so he certainly had a tremendous amount of vitality. Standard American diet. I think you guys know that well. We don't have much fish in our diet. We are short on omega-3s. We have less than 10% of Americans have enough omega-3 to meet the recommended daily allowance. Less than 10% have enough of the vitamins, the B vitamins or vitamin C, vitamin A in our diet. Less than 10% would have the trace minerals. I don't have any particular data on how many of us have a sufficient number of antioxidants, and I don't know that we have specific recommendations for that. Because we had a diet so high in carbohydrates and so low in our fruits and vegetables, we have to maintain a very high insulin level, much higher than our ancestors would have maintained several thousand years ago. We have a much higher level of inflammatory molecules, higher levels of obesity, and we have increasing amounts of chronic disease in ourselves and our children, more cancer, and more early dementia. Again, a diet that's closer to what your cells actually need is the Walls diet, the 9 cups of fruits and vegetables, 3 cups of greens, 3 cups of bright colors, 3 cups of any other non-starchy fruits and vegetable of your choice, source of omega-3 fatty acids, so that's fish, flax, hemp, coenzyme Q, organ meat or nutritional yeast, nuts or seeds, and your minerals, iodine, seaweed, iodized sea salt, iodized salt. Obesity, starvation, they are closely linked. Your brain, when it has plenty of micronutrients, it will sense very well that, okay, I've got all the parts I need. It will now then look to see, have I done so much physical work today that I'm going to be burning up some of my body to do that work? And if the answer is yes, I'm still hungry. But if the answer is no, because I'm like most Americans, I'm having a sedentary job, my brain will say, ah, Walls, you ate enough. It'll turn off my hunger. If, on the other hand, I had gone down to McDonald's and had some Big Macs, some French fries, picked up a DQ Blizzard, I may have sat around all day, but my brain will still say, I'm on fire. I need antioxidants. I am so on fire. I need some antioxidants to cool off all those free radicals I've got floating around. And so I'm going to be craving sweets. It probably also recognizes that my myelin's sort of thin, and so I'm going to be craving fat. Now, unfortunately, I may be not quite smart enough to realize my brain is trying to tell me to go eat blueberries and strawberries and raspberries and to catch some fish on the side. I'll go back down to DQ and have another Blizzard, and my brain will be more on fire, and I will crave more sweets, trying to get more antioxidants. The result is my brain will keep putting upward the total number of calories I can eat every day, and I will be chronically hungry. I will chronically crave sweet things. I will chronically crave high-fat content foods. My brain is trying to get what it needs. And somehow, I forgot the ancient wisdom of my great-great-great-great-greats that knew to eat these things. Okay. So once again, we are trillions of cells, and every moment there are trillions of biochemical reactions going on. And your brain is very adept at noting whether or not you are eating all of those micronutrients. And if you are not, it will keep you hungry until you are finally so gorged that it will stop. But you will be hungry, and it will keep ratcheting up the number of calories that it wants you to eat because your brain recognizes that you are starved of key nutrients. Okay. Now I'm going to take this to the next level, folks. Dopamine and pleasure. Dopamine focuses our attention. That's how the species has kept us alive for a long time. So whenever something is critical to our survival, dopamine will surge, so we pay attention, and it will also give us a fair amount of pleasure, so we want to do it again. So the original dopamine surge is all about food and sex, because those were necessary for continuation of the species. We had to procreate. We had to continue to eat. But today's dopamine surge has shifted a bit. We know that we see surges that occur with gambling, with video gaming, with drugs, and with violence. And, of course, this can lead to addictive, maladaptive behavior that can be very destructive on any of those four areas. That's why we see people having trouble with being hooked into video gaming, kids now sometimes flunking out of college, losing jobs over video gaming. People lose their homes over gambling. And, of course, we all know about drug abuse and some escalation of violence issues. But if you remember, the original dopamine surge is all about food and sex. The industry has figured out that they can manipulate how much dopamine surge we experience by the sugar, salt, and fat content in food. And food has been designed to maximize the uptake, one of glucose, but more importantly of dopamine, so that craving has been manufactured, leading to addictive behavior. People who know the food is not good for them, who know that they have a health problem, who know that I really want to lose weight, I am so committed, I am trying so hard, but they find it extraordinarily difficult to walk past a stand that has their favorite cafe latte with all that caramel, swirly, good stuff, or get past their favorite restaurant, or go past a McDonald's without getting a Big Mac, supersized French fries, and shakes. Our food's been designed to do that. So the food industry has been able to maximize craving by manipulating salt, sugar, fat. And then it also maximizes hunger by removing micronutrients. So your brain will continue to recognize, I'm starving. I don't have the micronutrients I need for my cells to work properly. So we have physiologic addiction coupled with the fact that your brain recognizes that you are experiencing starvation. Unfortunately, the public has been manipulated very effectively to maximize the profit of the food industry. It's very sobering. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about stress. Stress is the fight-or-flight response that has kept us alive in times of war and famine and fighting off the saber-toothed tigers, so it's a very important and helpful response. When that happens, we have run hard, gotten away from whatever bad thing there was trying to kill us, and the body knows that we've used up a lot of energy, so we ought to eat to replenish that energy. So stress will drive your hunger. Now, unfortunately, chronic stress will then lead to chronic hunger, increased inflammation, increased obesity, and it also lowers our total body magnesium stores. That's another recipe for adding to our obesity problem. So the question is, okay, what can I do to lower stress and decrease that stress response? Well, one is quiet time. And there are a variety of ways that one can get to quiet time. One is prayer, meditation, guided imagery, spending time in nature, walking quietly. All of that will lower the cortisol levels and will lower the inflammation molecules. There's another product called iMusic, little I, capital M-U-S-I-C. And that's music that's been re-engineered to induce alpha waves in the brain. They have a particular product called Zen Meditate. Do not play that while you're driving, of course. But you can play that to have the equivalent of a half hour or an hour meditation. And that has been shown to lower cortisol levels, lower stress levels. Increasing your magnesium is a good thing because living in chronic stress depletes total body magnesium. So taking oral magnesium is helpful. But another great way is to do Epsom salts. You can do an Epsom foot soak, and you absorb magnesium through the skin, Epsom salts in the bath. I was most thrilled when my daughter figured out how to put Epsom salts in the bathtub, light some candles, and chill out for half an hour. It really decreased the stress in my life a great deal. It was wonderful news. Okay. Inflammation. Having a big belly increases inflammation molecules. Having a lot of inflammation molecules increases the likelihood you'll have a big belly. We're sort of a negative feedback loop that keeps getting worse. Now, the inflammation, remember I said earlier, if you eat a diet high in grain, high in carbs, that turns on all of these genes that drive up inflammation. If you have a diet that is low in omega-3s, that worsens inflammation. Stress will worsen inflammation. Obesity worsens inflammation. And having chronic allergy exposure will worsen inflammation. So if you're allergic to cats, you keep a cat in your house, you're going to live under continued inflammation. If you have food allergies and you continue to eat your food allergies, that will worsen your inflammation. Now, to lower inflammation, one, move your diet away from grains and carbs. Increase your omega-3 intake. And you can do that by increasing fish, flax, hemp, using grass-fed meat as opposed to grain-fed meat. More greens. Greens are a good source of omega-3s. And, of course, meditation. Quiet time. Thinking about your magnesium. Food allergies. Gluten sensitivity is often unrecognized. It's been associated with fatigue, malaise, autoantibodies, arthritis, eczema, asthma, changes in the brain, psychological problems, neurological problems. Let's see. Oh, we're going to go back. Okay. So, I'm old enough, so back when I was in medical school, we were taught that celiac disease is when you're allergic to wheat and you've developed antibodies against the small bowel. The small bowel lining gets very thin. It ulcerates. It's sort of like that poison ivy that you see on your leg, but imagine it on your small bowel. So it's no wonder that you have diarrhea, you get malabsorption, and you're sickly. That makes sense. But we now realize the longer someone has gluten sensitivity, the more autoantibodies the person will begin to make. With each decade, more tissues are identified as foreign and more autoantibodies are made. So if you make your antibodies first against your small bowel, you'll show up with celiac disease. If you make it first against your thyroid, you'll show up with autoimmune thyroiditis. If you make it first against your skin, you'll show up with eczema. And so we are beginning to consider the possibility that gluten allergy and food allergies may be one of the drivers of autoimmune diseases. So if you have an autoimmune problem or a chronic disease problem, it may be worthwhile trying a gluten-free diet. And that's a chore. That's a pain in the neck. Absolutely. But I hope I have you convinced by now that eating green leaves, bright colors, and protein is healthier for you in a whole variety of ways. But that is a big change for most Americans. Now, in Asia, when people have food allergies, their bane is the rice allergy. Any food that we eat day in and day out, the longer you do that, you are more likely to develop a food allergy, which is why I'm trying to stress for you the importance of having variety. And ideally, you rotate so you don't eat the same thing more frequently than every 5 days. That can be a chore, but hopefully you'll get the concept that if you eat something day in and day out, you increase the likelihood of becoming allergic.
Even spinach?
Even kale.
Okay.
You know, so you might be okay, but the most cautious approach is to rotate your foods. As much as I love kale, I try to do kale today, spinach tomorrow, collards the next day, Swiss chard the day after, and then I rotate through. You can decide you're going to go through a bag of spinach, and that's going to be a bag of kale. But have some plan to rotate your food. Another advantage for doing that is it increases the diversity in your diet, which is also good. And again, if you have ongoing food allergy, increased amounts of inflammation, there are a lot of factors driving obesity. One can have gluten sensitivity and be obese, be overweight. Okay, so the diabetes obesity treatment choices. Usual care that I do day in and day out is send them off for ADA dietary instruction. We replace the insulin lack, sometimes with oral medicine, sometimes with insulin. Often people need drugs. If they don't initially, they will soon. The approach that I now use is I take the time to talk about a diet that requires much less insulin. If you eat green leaves, bright colors, and protein, and if your fruit is whole as opposed to juice, it requires much less insulin to keep your blood sugar under control. Much less. A small fraction. As compared to a diet that has white potatoes in grains, even whole grains. So I see when my patients embrace that and do the 9 cups of fruits and vegetables, get rid of the grains, minimize their white potatoes, I see people needing much less insulin and needing much less of their oral agents. I've seen people come off their insulin. They lose weight, they feel better, they have more energy. So once again, the Walls diet, nuts, seeds, DHA, eggs, 9 cups of fruits and vegetables, 3 cups of greens, sulfur-rich foods, so that's cabbage family, onion family, 3 cups of bright colors, 3 cups of your choice non-starchy, minimize grains and white potatoes, a source of omega-3 fatty acids, coenzyme Q and B vitamins, organ meats, nutritional yeast are particularly good for that. Minerals and iodine. Nutritional yeast is a good source for your minerals, although it does not have much iodine. For that, sea salt, iodized sea salt, dried kelp. I have kelp granules that I keep on my table and use like a salt shaker. And I have powdered kelp that I will shake onto my salads, into my soups, into anything that I make. I should remind you that before you make a radical change in your diet, as healthy as this is, I would strongly advise you to talk to your physician because you may have some unique medical circumstances that would cause this to have to be modified. For example, having kidney stones, it could mean that the green recommendation would have to be modified. Or being on Coumadin, you need to have a steady, reliable source for the number of vegetables that you have every day. It's not that you can't still have greens and be on Coumadin, but you have to have the same amount every day because they're going to have to adjust the Coumadin to get the correct proton. Okay, so what am I going to do about the obesity, starvation, addiction? Because what you just told me just so thoroughly depressed me, I feel like throwing my hands up. Okay, there's hope. So first, we'll talk about physical activity. Even modest increases of physical activity are very helpful. I'm not a big fan of going to the gym. I think physical activity is best when it's part of your life. Figuring out how to increase a few more steps every day and wearing a step counter is a very elegant way of doing that. Treat addiction. Realize that there's been a very intentional manipulation of the salt, sugar, fat content of your favorite foods, that you probably have dopamine surges, you probably have some level of addiction. Most Americans do. You know, I'll certainly put myself in that. I have been through that as well. So recognize what the triggers are. Try and avoid the triggers. Have a mental rehearsal how you can minimize the exposure. It's very hard to walk away from something that, to which you're addicted. Think about the possibility of food sensitivities and food allergies. Consider whether or not a gluten sensitivity could be part of the problem. Stress reduction, very helpful for all of us. Quiet time, those Epsom salt baths are great for you. If nothing else, get everyone else in your family to have one. It'll reduce your stress. And then, most importantly, the micronutrient-rich diet. Get rid of the starvation component. For many of my patients, if they address the starvation component, they find that the addiction component is much easier to manage. And so the approach that has worked very well for my veterans has been, and I tell them, eat 9 cups. Get the 9 cups in, and then eat what you want. Do your 9 cups. See to it that you've got, you know, plan for your minerals, your CoQ, your essential fatty acids. Get your 9 cups in. When you have that in, eat what you want. And what they discover, they're eating a whole lot less trash, and they begin, over time, not wanting that trash very much. It's very hard to stop things, but it's much easier to bring in something new. So my advice is, focus on the micronutrients, work your way towards 9 cups. 9 cups is not as hard as you think. If you have, cover your plate with green leaves every time you're going to have a meal. Then have a source of protein. And then if you want, some bright colors. And then eat what you want. Okay. So once again, you guys should have this down now. The Walls diet. You want to have some nuts, seeds, fish, DHA, eggs. 9 cups of fruits and vegetables. 3 cups of greens and other sulfurs. 3 cups of bright colors. 3 other non-starchy fruits and vegetables of your choice. Minimize grains. Minimize white potatoes. Think about how you're going to get some omega-3 fatty acids. Think about that CoQ and B vitamins. Nutritional yeast. It's wonderfully good for us. It's pretty inexpensive. You get it at the food co-op, natural food store. You can put it in your smoothies, put it in sauces, put it over your casseroles. Minerals and iodine. Most of America is short on iodine. Our soils are iodine depleted. We quit using table salt. Find some powdered kelp. Put it in your cooking, and you could look for some kelp granules, put on your table in addition to your iodized salt. Eat that way, you'll need less insulin. Eat that way, you'll have less inflammation. Eat that way, you'll have less autoimmune disease. Eat that way, you'll have healthier brains. Eat that way, you'll probably live a whole lot longer. And a whole lot happier. And I tell my vets, your sex life would be a whole lot better too. So, closing thought. The more health you want, the more micronutrients you want to eat. Do not waste calories on food that does not have micronutrients in them. For more information, you can go to my website, www.terrywalls.com. My book, which is being printed, Minding My Mitochondria, talks about the science behind these concepts and has 50 recipes of things that kids actually do eat. Institute for Functional Medicine is a professional organization of docs who think like me. What can we do to improve the biochemistry, the biochemical functioning of your cells Great organization, trains healthcare professionals. I'd encourage all of you to check them out. Center for Mind-Body Medicine is another similar kind of organization aiming at improving the cellular function by making the biochemical reactions happen, by ensuring the fact that we have all the substrates that we need to have. The World's Healthiest Foods is a terrific cookbook and resource book by George Madelgin. He has this, that book's in thirds. The first third is sort of the science behind why you want to eat this way, the kinds of things which I've just been talking about. The middle third are his 100 best foods, why they're good for you and how to make them in less than 15 minutes, which I do appreciate. And the last third is by nutrient, what are the best food sources? And this was one of the resources that I found when I was struggling with finding how to redesign a diet that would meet the needs of my mitochondria and the needs of my brain.